Orange Cone presents Tales from the Black Box. Episode 2, The Banshee. Written and narrated by Harrison Mark.
The first thing I noticed was the metallic taste of blood pooling warm and thick in my mouth. I could feel it gradually filling until my lips finally burst open like a dam, and the crimson river began its slow meander up my cheek. I began to blink rapidly as it gathered just below my left eye, trying to ward off the sticky river that tried to find a route back inside my body. That was how I came to realize the second aspect of my situation. I was upside down. Between blinks and the feel of blood streaming up my face, I noticed a bright light in my periphery, coming from somewhere behind my head. As my senses gradually started coming back to me, I began to feel how frigid the air was. Harsh and brittle, it contrasted sharply with the warmth inside my mouth. The air around me carried the unmistakable bite of winter, which began to gnaw at my exposed skin mercilessly and relentlessly, until I had no choice but to focus my thoughts on the blood draining from my mouth in order to feel any semblance of warmth. With great effort, I lifted my right arm up and touched my nose before grunting and dropping my arm again. I could feel neither my nose nor my fingers. I realized before blacking out again that I must have been there in the cold for quite some time. This one didn't last too long. Or at least, I didn't think it did. But when I came to, I became aware of how much pain my head was in. It started with a dizziness, the kind of feeling you get when you've been hanging upside down for too long, or have just gotten off of one of those merry-go-round things that they had in playgrounds when you were young, after one of your friends spun you around just a little too fast for a little too long. Eventually, this feeling worsened until it was not merely playground dizziness anymore. It was like some tiny man was jackhammering away at the gray matter of my brain, chipping it apart piece by piece. Meanwhile, some invisible force seemed to have gripped both my eyelids with needle-like claws, and it felt like they had become stretched and yanked up over my head. As I became more and more conscious, the pain in my head grew greater and greater, the jackhammering louder and louder. I had to scream. I just couldn't contain it any longer. And with that long, primal noise that escaped my throat, so too came a splattering of the rest of the blood that had been settling inside my cheek. It made a wet, sloshing sound as it hit whatever lay in front of me. And in that moment, it felt as though I was in a cocoon, transforming into a most hideous, hellish, and doomed creature. I stopped screaming and lay very still, the pain in my head reaching a crescendo, denying me the ability to think about much else. I don't know if this lasted minutes or hours, but eventually the pain subsided enough for me to open my eyes. My breath came out in rapid bursts of cold, white air, and I felt icicles piercing into my lungs with each inhalation. I soon realized the top of my head was pressed against a rough, beige surface that I surmised to be the inside of a car roof. My car roof. My 2008 Toyota Camry. Yes! I grunted in triumph before the pain came rushing back to me, making me wince. Okay, I said to myself. I'm in my car, but why is it upside down? Where am I? I struggled to free myself from my current position. Ignoring the pounding in my skull, I tried to bring up both my arms this time, only to feel another sharp rush of pain. I let out another scream, this time a short one through gritted teeth. Slowly, I moved my head to look at my body. I was still buckled into the driver's seat, which had become mostly unhinged. My seatbelt was the only thing keeping me from falling forward, onto the car roof. The steering wheel was pressing into my stomach, and the windshield was shattered, the glow of the interior light just outside of my vision, though dimmer than I had initially experienced it, allowed me to see the thousands of small shards of glass scattered around my head. It provided only slight assistance, and outside my windshield, there was only darkness. As I strained to check myself, I noticed that I was wearing a suit. The jacket was torn at the arm, and flecks of crimson decorated the white shirt beneath. How strange. Fuzzy memories returned to me, if only for a moment, and I saw myself standing in front of my closet, staring at my suit, still on the hanger. The memory carried a pang of intense grief alongside it, but soon melted away as my attention returned to my present situation. Looking back at the left arm, where the suit jacket was torn, I noticed the limb was gruesomely twisted, the bone clearly broken. I grimaced as I slowly brought my right arm across my body, and with some effort, unbuckled my seatbelt. My body fell onto the steering wheel, more slowly than I would have thought, and I wiggled myself free so that I was finally laying sideways, along the length of my car's roof. Groaning, I turned onto my side, feeling the crunch of broken glass beneath me. I spat out more blood. As the frosty air continued to seep in, through the shattered windshield and broken windows, I caught sight of something, a book, lying amongst the glass. The light hit it in just the right way so that I could see its cover. Amid a black background, a pale woman stood, her hands clasped to her face, her mouth open in silent terror. The title, in golden lettering, read simply, "A Collection of Irish Ghost Stories and Fairy Tales." Another flash of memory echoed through my mind. I remembered that book. Yes, it was from my childhood. The cover used to scare me, but the stories had been some of my favorites. Tales of mischievous leprechauns, great warriors on epic journeys, haunted castles, and of course, screaming ghosts. I loved that book as a kid, but what the hell is it doing in my car? That's when I saw the card, lying slanted against the book. The glare cast by the light against the laminated photo distorted the image to my hurting eyes, but I still recognized the portrait of the woman in the purple dress, staring back at me with a shy but familiar grin. My heart sank as I remembered where I had gotten that card. As I lay wheezing, coughing up blood, more memories started coming back to me. The first, after the recognition of the face on the card, was that silhouette. I remembered driving along the highway, the sun having just disappeared behind the trees, when a shape had come out of nowhere in the road in front of me. I couldn't quite remember what it had been, only a shadow standing there, watching my vehicle coming right for it. I must have been so startled that I swerved off the road. I had been in the mountains, that was for sure. The road had been narrow, and there had been a steep incline on either side. And then I remembered, with mounting horror, where I was. I was in the Adirondacks, and it was the middle of January. I'd remembered, thanks in part to Jack Frost viciously nipping at my nose, ears, and other extremities. January, the Adirondacks, middle of the night, car crash. Even as the pieces were coming back into place, one thing remained horribly clear. If I did not get out of here soon, I would be dead by morning.
Who cares?
The thought thrust its way to the front of my mind.
You're barely conscious, lying on the roof of a vehicle that's not going anywhere anytime soon. You're in the middle of the goddamn boonies, and there's not going to be a car or house for miles. Just close your eyes and sleep.
Sleep. Yes, that's what I needed. I just needed to close my eyes and try to forget the pound, pound, pounding inside my skull. Everything would be okay if I could just get a little sleep. For just a few hours. Then I might feel better, and maybe even have some daylight. I could walk down the road, where I would surely find a house or a car or someone eventually. But I needed my strength first. I needed daylight, and I just needed to close my eyes, pull my jacket over my nose, and my eyes shot open. A fresh gust of wind carried a small flurry of snowflakes into my car that landed softly on my skin. I could hear the icy winds howling their ghostly screams from outside. That was what I had just heard, right? The wind? It seemed to come from far off, maybe a couple miles away. It had to be the wind, I told myself, or maybe a side effect of my head injury. And yet, the sound I heard almost felt like something alive. It sounded terrible. It was sharp and shrill, and sounded absolutely terrified. At first, I thought that it was just the wind. Had to be. But then I heard it again. My blood ran cold. It sounded like, somewhere off in those dark, dark trees, a woman was being murdered. It was the sound of someone letting out their last blood-curdling screeches before the end came. I waited 5 minutes, not knowing what to do, before I heard it again. That's when something else began to creep inside my brain. It couldn't be a woman dying. Unless I was going crazy, the screams were getting louder, not softer. They were getting closer. My eyes wandered over to that book, the one from my childhood, that had mysteriously found its way into my car. The face of the woman on that cover seemed more ominous to me now than it ever did, twisted into a horrifying scream. What were those creatures called again? The ones from Irish folklore? My mother used to tell me stories about them. She would read to me from that very book, a gift she had gotten from my grandmother, who had come over from Ireland. Mom would read it to me when I was little, chuckling gently whenever she noticed how I would squirm and refuse to look at that cover. She had told me not to worry, that she wouldn't let any banshee find me. Banshee! Yes, that was it. She would read me stories about banshees. She had kept that book on her nightstand, hoping I would come in and ask her to read from it. She had kept it year after year, even after I had grown up and moved past such childish stories. My sister Caroline once told me that she had still kept it by her nightstand even after I had left. Why had I ever left? Oh, how I longed for the days when she would tell me about banshees, when I was safe and warm beneath the cover of wool blankets, my belly filled with cookies. What was that? My head was swimming in fire. My arm throbbed as I shifted my body, moving into a half-sitting position. That sound, that infernal howl, whether it was the wind or not, it was definitely closer. The pounding in my head was as relentless as ever, and I couldn't think. Did I imagine those pounds on my car exterior? Or was that just my mind playing tricks on me?
Just go to sleep.
The voice had returned. This time, it hissed the words with more than a hint of malice.
There's nothing you can do. Go to sleep.
No, I can't sleep. I can't do this. Panic began to fill my broken frame, like water rushing into a sinking ship. Using my good arm, I reached out and wiped the shattered glass away from the path in front of me. Grunting, moaning, I extended my arm again and managed to grip the corner of the car. I guess not all the glass had been cleared, as I immediately felt 100 tiny little shards stab the top of my hand. But I tightened my grip, trying and failing to focus on anything other than the pain. Somehow, I managed to drag myself out of what was once my windshield, and the next thing I knew, I was lying on my back, greedily sucking in the frost-laden air. My useless arm sat crookedly beside my body, the little man inside my head, jackhammering on. Okay, fine, I said to myself. You're out of the car, now what? Part of me felt like I had made some progress just by escaping that metal tomb. But part of me realized how safe that tomb had been. I was now outside where the snow was falling incessantly to the ground, where the predators of the night prowled their domain, where the banshee is. I tried to remember what exactly a banshee was, what they were after in all those old tales. I knew that they screamed, and I knew that when you saw one, that meant your time on this earth was running short. I stared at the book cover, trying to study the image of the banshee, but I soon realized I hadn't been looking at the book at all, but at the card. At the portrait of the woman. At my mother. I saw her tired smile, her sparkling eyes, as if she was right there in front of me. I could almost feel her arms wrapped around me on those cold January nights of my youth. I could almost see the grayness of her skin as they lowered her into the cold, cold ground. Enough, I said to myself. I was standing next to the car, surrounded by tall trees that were but slender shadows in the night. It was a bizarre feeling. One moment I had been lying flat on my back, the next I was standing straight as a soldier. My knees buckled a bit and I had to steady myself, but after taking a few baby steps, I discovered that neither leg had been seriously hurt. For that much, I was thankful. The dim interior light from the large silhouette that was once my car was still the only thing illuminating the surrounding landscape. The sky was moonless, as dark could be. The only thing darker was the grotesque shape of the car, sitting dead and defeated a few feet behind me. I heard a slight hissing sound coming from the engine, but I couldn't tell if there was any smoke rising from it. The fact that it had not caught fire when I had been unconscious inside had been a blessing. I didn't know if it would still catch on fire or if the time for that had passed, but I didn't intend to wait until daylight to find out. Not out here. The wind seemed to pick up, and I felt like an old sailor standing on the bow of his ship. To my left were the dark, thick bodies of the Adirondack trees reaching up into an empty sky. They seemed to slope down, and I could only surmise that I was atop some kind of ravine. It was another small miracle that the car had not kept rolling down. To my right, the ground sloped sharply up a good 20 feet. I did not know how I knew, as I was still greatly disoriented, but I did know that I would find the road if I could make it up that small hill. Strangely enough, this is another aspect of my odd journey I do not remember. Although it must have taken every ounce of strength I had in my legs and my one good arm, the next thing I knew, I was standing on top of the hard, gray pavement. The wind continued to howl and my head continued to pound. Somewhere to my left, the corpse of my car lay on its top, one good push away from utter destruction. I did not look back. I searched my mind, hoping to find some clue of which way I should go from here. The voices were silent. The wind grew louder. From somewhere off in the distance, the banshee screamed again. It was a scream of a mother who had come home from work to find her children brutally murdered, the final despairing wail of a tormented soul before it took its last plunge off a building. It was the sound telling me I had to move, or I may end up howling my own tune of terror on this mountainside, forever and ever. So, I began to walk. Beneath the vacant sky, I staggered, like something more dead than alive, down that dark road. I had no idea where I was going, and I could only tell I was on the road by the feeling of the pavement beneath my feet. Time had become meaningless. I felt like I was stumbling through some kind of void or purgatory. The road seemed eternal, and I began to wonder if I had died and was being punished, doomed to wander the same cold path forever. My right hand trembled with the cold. My left was numb. The screams were following me. Every now and again, that terrible screech would pierce the fragile fabric of the night air. It would last for 4 or 5 seconds before fading away again into nothingness. Sometimes, I would go for minutes without hearing the scream. Sometimes, only seconds separated them. But that's when I began to become convinced that I was being followed. No matter how far I got down that eternal path, I could not rid myself of that wretched wailing. The screams kept on following. They would come from behind, usually, but occasionally, I would hear something come from far to the left or right of me. I began to feel trapped walking down that road. Tall sentinels stood all around me, closing in, crowding me like bars in a prison cell. The woods were the only thing that frightened me more than the cold. They concealed whatever it was that had been stalking me, But even if it meant following this empty road forever, I knew I could never bring myself to walk past those menacing trees. I didn't want to know what lay beyond their walls. My mother had taken me into the woods once. The memory hit me like a train, so sudden that I didn't even know where it had come from. They had been these very woods, in fact, or similar enough. I remembered that crisp autumn day when Caroline and I had visited her, only a few weeks after the divorce was finalized. I remembered hugging her outside her Adirondack wood cabin that sat on a great blue lake that shimmered in the sun. Her new boyfriend had been the one to suggest we take a hike in the woods, just beyond the lake. He had known I was a Boy Scout and that I loved hiking. He had picked out a path just for me. My mother had been the one to tell him I loved the woods. And even back then, I knew that they were just trying to get the most of their time with me. But I hated Mom's boyfriend. And in the instant he was telling me about this wonderful trail he had found, I was looking past him, looking at Mom, looking at her with her arms at her sides and that strained smile she used to wear when she wanted me to be happy. And in that one terrible moment, I hated Mom too. I hated that she had broken up our family, left me with a dad whose only love was his work. And that day, I decided to show her how much she had hurt me. I ran ahead of them in those woods, ran off the path and into the great green expanse. I spent the rest of the day and night in the middle of them. I made a shelter and a fire and collected some of the berries that I knew were safe to eat. I kept my eye on the sun to know my way back, and when I was sure that Mom had been tortured enough, and when my hunger got a little too much to bear, I headed back. She started sobbing when I came out of those woods and fell to the ground. She grabbed me and started shaking me, shouting, "Don't you ever do that to me again!" On our way home, Caroline had told me that Mom had been a mess the entire time I was gone. Calling park police, calling Dad, forcing her boyfriend to wander the woods with his hunting pals searching. She didn't sleep, Caroline told me. She just sat there all through the night on her bed, looking through a photo album of our family. She always held us a bit closer after I ran away. I never tried it again. I was snatched away from the memories. Two screams this time. There were definitely two screams. The Banshee wasn't alone. I began to hyperventilate and wrap my good arm around my stomach. It was so cold. So cold. I began to think about that cabin, somewhere in these mountains. Caroline owned it now. It was left to her in the will. She had invited me to stay the weekend with her there after the funeral, in the next town over. I had said no. I had to get home. There was a business meeting I had to get to. I had to get home that night. My legs quickened without me telling them to. My lungs inflated and deflated like a bicycle pump as I became more and more suffocated beneath the presence of the starless sky. The Banshees were closer now, and I couldn't tell what direction they were coming from. Their screams sounded sad, as if they pitied me for what was about to happen. I kept walking. My brain felt like it was melting, and my knees felt like they were going to pop. I remembered when I sprained my knee during cross-country practice, my senior year of high school, how Mom had gotten me that leg roller, how she had attended every single one of my meets, even when I had told her not to come, how she had sent Coach that nasty email after he said I couldn't make varsity because of that injury. Oh, how embarrassed I was.
You killed her.
The voice was like a whisper on a dying gust of wind.
She never stopped loving you, and you killed her.
No, I screamed, maybe aloud, maybe inside my head. Behind me, the screaming was getting closer, and I heard something else, something that might have been cackling, or it might have been weeping.
She wanted to see you, said the voice. But you said you had to work. You said that you had meetings. She was dying. and you knew she was dying, and you didn't come to see her, and she loved you, and you killed her, and you killed her!
No! I screamed, this time filling the empty void of the night with my voice. My legs began to go faster, and each breath felt like needles. Stop it. Just stop it. I didn't think she wanted to see me. I didn't think she was dying.
Caroline was there. Your mom was dying, and she wanted to see you. You broke her heart. You killed her. You killed her. She loved you, and you killed her.
My legs moved back and forth, back and forth. My heart sent blood to my body, but it only leaked out of my mouth and my nose. My brain pounded. My arm flapped like paper in a storm. The wind whistled and shook me to my rattled bones. The gray road stretched on and on as the trees leaned over, staring at me with a thousand eyes, judging me, screaming at me. This was all your fault. You killed her. You killed her. You killed her. And the banshees. Oh, those specters of vengeance and doom. The air danced with the sound of their terrible laughter and their wailing screeches. There were four of them now, then five, then seven, then ten, coming from my right, my left, behind me, in front of me. The banshees were closing in, watching me, waiting like vultures until I fell down from some kind of exhaustion or until I gave up in defeat.
No, you must not let them.
It was a new voice in my head.
It's not your fault. You can't let them win.
I winced, grinding my teeth, tasting metal, tasting blood. Before me, the road wound up onto a hill. I just had to make it up that hill, I told myself. Whatever happens after that, I have to make it up that hill. I walked, ignoring the trees that seemed to extend into the heavens and watch me with their ancient eyes. I walked, my body numb to the chill of the winter wind that had been battering me so relentlessly. It was nothing to me now. I walked, feeling the ghosts of my mother's cookies sliding down my throat, feeling phantom kisses planted on my forehead. I walked, seeing that gray face that I had seen in the coffin that was now floating in empty black space, two eyes wide open, yet seeing nothing.
She wanted to see you. She wanted to see you.
I walked, even as 20 or 30 or 100 banshees continued their screams and their harsh winter howls, closing in, laughing like a band of lunatics, so close to dragging me off into the dark, dark woods.
I'm sorry.
I found myself whimpering, to the woods, to the sky, to the banshees. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Don't take me. Please, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Suddenly, I found myself on top of the hill. Aside from the tall, leering trees, the night sky seemed to open up, and I felt like I was able to breathe again. Behind me, the cackling and the screaming and the crying was approaching rapidly. I dared not look behind me, because I feared what might be looking back. But the sounds were about only 20 feet back and closing fast. And that's when I saw it. Below me, maybe 100 feet away, two fireflies cut through the night. They sat there, unmoving, staring at me. I narrowed my eyes. Go to them. I began walking forward. Right foot, left foot, right foot, left foot. As I grew closer, the fireflies grew bigger. They took the shape of a square, eventually illuminating the large rectangular frame that contained them. And then, the realization hit. Not fireflies. Light. Windows. A barn. I picked up the pace, half falling downhill. Tears began to well up in my eyes. I had made it. I was so close. My head kept kept on pounding and my arm kept on throbbing, but I had made it. I yelled, forgetting about the pain that scorched every inch of my body. I screamed. I babbled complete nonsense as my legs bolted for the barn, for the light, for safety. I could hear the movement behind me, the sound of feet on pavement, the sound of many feet. I heard sticks snapping and leaves and snow crunching in the woods. My heart lurched. The banshees were on top of me, but I was so close. I tripped. My foot slipped, and I came down on my ankle, tumbling down the rest of the hill and landing headfirst on soft, mushy ground. That was it, I thought. I'm done for. The banshees were surrounding me, cackling and sobbing. The pounding in my head started to subside. And for the first time since I'd woken up in my car, I found my body relaxing, seeping into that soft, soft ground. I'm going to see you, Mom, I thought in those fleeting moments. I'm going to see you soon, and then I can tell you how sorry I am that I never came to see you. I kept telling myself you wouldn't die yet, that you would have just a little bit longer. In truth, I was scared. I was so scared of so many different things. But I have so much to tell you, Mom, and I love you. I love you. I love you. The sound broke through the night. The banshees shrieked and howled. My eyes sprang open and I found myself bathed in a yellow glow. Was this it? Was this what death looked like? Slowly, I lifted my head from the ground. A shadow stood before me, blocking the yellow light in the shape of a man. Suddenly, the shadow lifted a stick. No, not a stick. A gun. A shotgun. The shadow pointed the shotgun at the sky and let loose another deafening crack. From behind me, not 10 feet away, I heard startled yelps and screeches and whimpers. The shadow reloaded and sent a third shot blasting into the empty sky. From behind me, scampers and scratches. My senses returning to me, I mustered the strength to push myself to my knees. From this vantage, I was able to see the shadow was actually a man, a great gray mustache covering his upper lip. He wore a green t-shirt and plaid boxers, and his graying hair was matted from having just woken up. I had never seen a more welcome sight in my life. It was like seeing an angel.
You're right, boy, the man said.
I nodded slowly, my head swimming and throbbing. He was talking to me, but his eyes were focused on something else, something behind me.
The banshees, I muttered.
My teeth were chattering. My savior raised an eyebrow, but he never took his gaze from the road.
The what?
He asked. I spat out a glob of blood, and maybe a tooth. Banshees, I said. I struggled to keep my eyes open. They were following me, and you scared them off, and you saved me. The man stood quiet for a moment. His shotgun was now pointed at the same direction his eyes were looking.
Get inside, son, he said, ejecting the shells. Get inside, and I'll call you an ambulance.
I sat there, unmoving, staring at this man. For the first time, his eyes shifted down at me.
Get inside now, boy, or we'll both be a feast for the coyotes.
I stood still for a moment more. My mind was blank, static. Slowly, I turned my head, following his gaze toward the road. Standing on the far side, illuminated by the light emanating from the open barred door, was a pack of coyotes. 20, maybe more. All snarling, all bone thin, all starving. Their black eyes gleamed and their fangs were yellow. They paced, nervously, put off by the man's gun, but clearly still willing to risk it for a meal. Then, suddenly, the biggest coyote, towering over the others by at least a head, walked out onto the pavement. Locking his eyes onto me, he snarled and then let out a... I felt the bitter wind again. My head began to pound.
Please, son, the man said, gripping the shotgun tighter. For the love of God, can you stand?
I could. And I did. Feeling my strength rapidly leaving me, I limped toward the man and the door. I looked at him, and I opened my mouth to thank him, but not a sound came out. Not even a squeak or a whimper. I dragged myself into his barn. Never pointing his gun away from the coyotes, he slowly backed inside after me.
This has been The Banshee. Written and narrated by Harrison Mark. Story edited by Connor Walsh and Stefan Feibel. Produced and sound designed by Connor Walsh. To become a patron and support this channel, go to patreon.com/orgeco. Orgeco presents Tales from the Black Box, an anthology series.